I think he's right as far as that goes, that she could have worked that particular city council to get some validation and support from it, had she had the energy.
Right, just to make sure this continuity is right. By this time, the conservative city council was gone, the progressives had a solid majority.
But on the other hand, had there not been a kind of a clash, I would call it a personalities clash in style, the greater public wouldn't have got anything, because if it doesn't sound polarized, the Sentinel's not going to even deal with it, especially if you're poor most of the time, you know. So by stepping on their toes and having Republicans little gossiping behind their meeting walls about, oh boy, Jane is rude, and who does she think she is, and how can we do that anyway? And the things they said, the newspaper picked up that the progressives had a certain amount of hostility toward her direct approach and her now demands, and it got some play. So a greater number of people started talking about it. Now, I think there needed to be a dialogue with that greater number of people, but she did trigger it becoming a front burner issue, you know. I feel that because of work both of you had done, Marty was a lot stronger supporter of Jane, even though they didn't get along with each other, than anyone else in there. I don't know if Marty was on the council, but in and out.
You're talking about 1990?
I don't know. I can't think chronologically.
What are you talking about? I don't understand what you're talking about.
Jane's relationship to the city of Santa Cruz and her several strikes, her hunger strikes.
1885.
And her relationship to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, whose motivation was to co-opt the community energy and make sure somebody themselves probably could make money off it and turn it into a business, which they still do, which is why they have the reputation of Jehovah's Witnesses in this town, which is why your friend Kimberly needs to differentiate herself from
them.
She's leaving them legally, but, you know, they got her off the ground and what they're building. And there's a lot of bureaucrats interested in what they're doing. And if that coalition doesn't get dominated by bureaucrats the way Tom's talking about his social issues committee being dominated by businessmen, it's just going to be what the Citizens Committee was, a money thing.
So the difference in 1988 was... You saw Jane, and a group of activists, some of them, you said you had conversations with me in which you attempted to persuade me that it would be better to talk to progressives sort of off to the side and
that's right.
Encourage them to join in and not to do demonstrations, not to go to city council in large numbers. See, I don't remember these conversations very clearly, so I can't.
No, you're describing them well.
I don't know. I'm guessing it.
I disagree.
Well.
I think both need to happen to be effective. I don't think Tom could have done what he did at getting these one-on-one conversations where people actually have to respond, show where they're at.
Well, Tom disagrees with you, I think.
Well, he can disagree with me,
right.
But I still believe this. That work wouldn't have been effective if there weren't either the fact or the threat, the potential of a sudden public, let's say, menace for the Republicans.
Well,
a public demonstration or rebellion is something, you know, like what they manipulated themselves by doing to the town clock New Year's thing.
Tom has brought up the fact that he feels that our demonstrations were ineffectual or to some extent pointless or counterproductive. Let's see if I'm wrong on this, Tom, because we didn't offer them any kind of out or release.
Well,
he felt.
Strategically, that's smart.
Well, there are certain situations where that was, yes, where that's an accurate description of what I thought happened. But overall, I think it is the more important picture. Overall, had you offered that opportunity to the progressives, as you say, speaking to them off on the side, discussed with them the concerns, and Linda says you have to create their desire to do that, and that's certainly true. I mean, I thought Marty Wormhout, and to a lesser extent John Laird, were exceptions to that normal thing. They're just weren't just liberals. They're out there. I mean, well, she is anyway. Marty is still out there. She's on the short end of this work that she's doing now. She's been willing to take some really extreme positions.
Taking on the whole INS, fighting UCSC when everybody else in that coalition accomplished in trying to get the River Street children, including Jane Emler, had given up on it because we're sick of UCSC and President Gardner or whatever. We're sick of them. You know, we were just trying to negotiate this building that they had left sitting there empty. And they wanted to see how much they could rip off the city of Santa Cruz for. And they didn't give a shit about anything but money, and they were happy to say so, you know. And Santa Cruz is like this David against Goliath in that dialogue. And Marty kept going back even when she was told not to. She kept pushing for something. Now, we have some complaining to bicker over the amount of money it cost, but the fact that she was willing to put her own self and her political weight here on the line, I thought was impressive. To get some kind of shelter that would include some of the street people and some of the mental health victims that were just pushed out by Reagan back then.
And it seemed to...
It seems we've run out of tape. There is actually a second tape which covers the remainder of this conversation, a very interesting one, particularly for folks who've been around Santa Cruz for a while and have been working on the idea of different strategies to change things. However, at the moment, we don't have the other tape, so let's hear a little more from Morgan Firestar, and then let's go into a rebroadcast of the KZSC show with Dan Hopkins and yours truly. Of course, listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Stay tuned for more of Bathrobes Pure's Broadsides.
Children. the show right now, Robert Norse and Dan Hopkins. How are you guys doing tonight?
Okay, Michael.
Well, it's an interesting week, of course, with all the focus on San Diego and the Republican convention, and they talk about certainly the welfare cuts and what the Republicans stand for, and making sure that immigrants don't come in this country, and children born in this country aren't going to be citizens, certainly homosexuals have to be a little scared about what they're hearing down there, so all different kinds of things, not a lot of tolerance.
No, not much tolerance here in Santa Cruz.
And compassion, two words that kind of get lost when we talk about Republicans, it seems like.
Well, you got to talk about Democrats and progressives here in Santa Cruz, because those are the politicians that we have to contend with locally. I think it makes nice reading in the headlines of the paper, but it's actually pretty distant from us in terms of how people are being treated on the streets by the Santa Cruz City Council, for instance, and the Board of Supervisors, and the Police Department.
So some of the things we're seeing, nationally, we're seeing locally too, kind of a change of heart.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting that the progressives who would favor civil rights in Nicaragua and would oppose Dole's cuts have no problem with closing down the only open-air shelter in Santa Cruz, the only legal place for people to sleep, have no problem with enforcing the anti-homeless sleeping ban law, which makes it illegal for people to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night. And I really think we have to deal with our own house here. Not saying you shouldn't, pay attention to what goes on in San Diego. Indeed, I was just reading stuff on the internet about San Diego protests by homeless protesters.
Sure.
About what's going on there. But what we need to deal with, I think, here is the kind of victimless crime increase that is being foisted upon us by the politicians who are currently the front runners for the Santa Cruz City Council, Michael Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews.
So when are the elections? They're in November?
They are in November, first Tuesday of November.
And those two seats are up?
There are four seats up.
Four seats
actually.
Up.
There's Yokoyama is retiring, Byers is running again, so is Mayor Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews.
So, and your point is that if we don't like how some of these issues, the most important is the sleeping ban, right?
Certainly one of the most important, sure.
And what other ones in town?
Well, just how are people who are poor in public spaces
homeless
treated?
Homeless shelters, sure. Yeah.
I mean, like, if you're sitting down on the sidewalk, are you going to be arrested if you have a beard and long hair and are playing a guitar, if you look poor? Are you going to be hassled in a business or in a restaurant or a cafe if you have that a particular appearance and the restaurant owner doesn't take a shine to you? I mean,
sure.
I think everybody here needs some basic
rights. And the city council really affects those kind of things?
They can.
As much as any.
Sure, the mayor particularly in his public statements.
Sure. And so are there any candidates out there that look like who are more sympathetic to the causes of homelessness, Gary?
Yeah, I think so. I think we have David Minton Silva running, for instance, who's not only more sympathetic to poor people and homeless people, but also to union people and working people. I think he favored the arbitration, which I guess the majority of Santa Cruzans favored over Mike Rotkin's machinations around that issue last May. He's concerned with environmental issues and affordable housing. And most important to me, and again, it's because it's an issue I particularly close to me, he actually showed up at city council several times wrapped in a blanket to dramatize to the city council and to those watching the televised version of city council that there have been people outside the city council for 100 and, I guess today it's 67 days, Dan, something like that.
Right, 167. Mm-hmm.
And Dan's certainly one of them.
Sure.
Trying to get a reasonable modification of the law. Not the right to sleep anywhere and everywhere, but the right to sleep legally somewhere.
Another good candidate to vote for city council is Kristen Anderson on the issue of the sleeping ban. She's actually composed different songs and played them in English and Spanish before the city council out at the Sleep Out in front of City Hall, and she continues to support it vigorously. This is an unpaid commercial announcement for Kristen, who just didn't get any mention on the KZSC show, which we're listening to. By the way, any references to KZSC should be ignored. Any fun, as you are listening to free radio here.
It's just nice to know if you want change out there and are looking for it and not happy with the way things are going, that there are people out there who are trying to get in there and seize a little bit of power and change things. That's the point, isn't it?
I think it's a particularly opportune moment, not just because we have elections coming up, but there's also, for the first time, a significant legal attack on the city's sleeping ban happening in the courts. It's coming up on the 30th, and maybe Dan will speak about that. He has some papers laid out here. There's a very significant attack on the First Amendment rights of protesters, which was orchestrated by Mayor Rotkin and supported by Cynthia Matthews, which is the so-called injunction against the City Hall sleepout. That's happening. There is, for the first time, increased tabling down in the mall, increased presence of those who are, some of them not homeless, but who feel that it's wrong for people to be arrested and dragged away and have their possessions taken and face all kinds of court time and jail time simply for the act of sleeping at night, which 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz face. And I mean, I think I know about jail for stupid things. I just got out of spending a month in jail for serving free food in San Francisco. I mean, that hasn't happened since Sandy Loringer and Brian Staley were hauled away here in Santa Cruz in 1989. But it shows you that there's a real crazy, vicious edge to things, and you don't have to be a Republican in San Diego to be doing that kind of stuff.
Sure, and you wouldn't quite, I mean, we never really expect these things in Santa Cruz, and it's also a point where we try to see Santa Cruz as a model city, because if it can't happen here, we don't really think it can happen anywhere. And unfortunately, it seems like most of the things that happen here are happening pretty much everywhere else. There isn't that much difference here in Santa Cruz, even though we have a, quote, socialist mayor.
I love the way you say that. Sofa bed socialist is what they call him.
And it is an interesting point to see, to just look at San Diego and then just say, well, we're fine here in Santa Cruz, but not San Diego. We'll take a call here. Hello, you're on the air.
Does San Diego have a proportionate number of homeless people proportionate with Santa Cruz?
Yeah, the question was, does San Diego have a proportionate number of homeless people in Santa Cruz? Actually, that was the question. And I've heard they were moving homeless people around, so they weren't in the camera's view or offering them off-site camping or something like that.
You know, the only thing I've heard about San Diego has been through a couple of posts on the Internet. Although San Diego was notorious several years ago through massive violations of the rights of homeless people, and there was a kind of a union of the homeless movement that began most recently in 1992 and 93. I don't have specific stats on the numbers of homeless people in San Diego. The question is, are those who are in San Diego afforded basic rights? I think that's the question that we have to address to our city council people.
I wondered why are there so many homeless in Santa Cruz? I've been in many cities recently and don't see many homeless as we do in Santa Cruz.
Well, in Santa Cruz, you get a kind of a variety of different populations. You get, you get the surfer population, you get young folks passing through, you have folks who indeed have been living here for years and have fallen through the cracks and the safety net, or the remains of the safety net. And also, Santa Cruz is a sort of a counterculture center. You know, there's a lot of people here who want to try alternate lifestyles, and they don't mind being out in public on the streets. Some of them aren't homeless, of course. So it may be, it depends, of course, on what you're comparing it to. And also, Santa Cruz is a beautiful beachside town, lovely climate.
I'm comparing it also to Chico, California.
Right, well, Chico, of course, is less of a vacation spot than Santa Cruz, no question about it. And, of course, it's, I think you find this often in many coastal towns like San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Ventura.
It's neither as hot or as cold as it is everywhere else. It's more temperate on the coast, too. Yeah. Okay, caller, we'll take
thank
it off
you.
The air. Yeah, thank
sure,
you.
Sure, thank you, caller.
Okay, yeah, well, how does Santa Cruz compare with everybody else? Because that's always been the line that that if you actually do something, proper with the homeless, if you do something really nice here, then they're always going to get deluged from outside. I mean, that's always the point.
This is the argument used by Mayor Mike Rotkin, that if he, for example, affords people basic human rights in Santa Cruz, the right not to be arrested for sleeping, which, for example, is afforded to people in Berkeley and is afforded to people in Palo Alto, even though he says no other city in California does it, that somehow 10 million homeless people will come running in. That's not an exaggeration. That was the figure he actually used.
We're going to take another caller here. Okay, you're on Talk About.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Great.
This is a very important topic, but, you know, I'm always lost when we talk about the homeless because I wonder what really is the program that you're trying to achieve? How can the lives of people who are on the streets be changed with what you're saying?
Well, that's a real good question, and it's a real big question, and different people address different parts of it.
First of all, they can get sleep. I mean, that's
yeah,
that's
I mean, the part of the question I'm concerned with is the civil rights of people who are on the streets. I mean, there are, of course, obviously important questions like jobs for people on the streets, like affordable housing for people on the streets, like medical care for people on the streets. So these are big and important issues, but while...
You know, I've lived in this town for 15 years.
Right.
I spent all my excess income on giving money and food and clothes and blankets to people on the streets, and I've tracked many of the people on the streets for 15 years who I've tried to help. Nothing seems to get them off the streets. Hmm. And many times when I try to keep helping homeless people and keep pondering the issue of what does it take. The other day, I met a man who came stumbling out of the jail in town saying that the doctors gave him the wrong dose of medicine and his whole half left side was paralyzed. I gave him some juice and food and a little bit of money to get him through the day. And all of that goes on day after day after day, year after year after year.
Right.
And when I hear 130 days or 150 days, of just homeless people in front of City Hall. I've seen it every day all these years.
Right,
and so what kind of programs are we really trying to achieve, which nothing has been able to achieve?
Well, they're not in front of City Hall, caller, because they want you to feed them or give them medical care or provide them with a bunch of services.
No, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that at all. I was saying that everything has failed. Even the achievements that we can applaud on little
things. Don't put yourself down. I mean, I think that when you do the things you've done, you do have an effect. Now, you know, it may be a short
term. But what about you? And what about the programs that we have that are more politically or, shall we say, more people-oriented? So
what programs? You thinking like the River Street Shelter and the Homeless Community Resource Center, perhaps? Or?
No, I'm thinking about the protests that are waged.
The protest?
Yeah.
Well,
people just walk by them.
Oh, well, maybe, Dan, do you want to address that? You're one of the chief protesters. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm Dan, and one of the things that, I've been there for 167 days, and the reason that I'm there is because the cruel way in which all the shelters were closed down, and the heavy population of mentally and physically disabled people that are in the homeless community were thrown out of that shelter down there on River Street, and actually quite a few people have been hurt, and we believe at least 3 people have died as a result of that place closing down that we know of. And I'm there for humanitarian reasons.
Well, see, I believe you, and I know that's true. And you're speaking over the radio to how many supposed thousands of people, and nobody does a thing? And it's been like this for year after year after year. People are dying on the streets of many different reasons.
Right. Well, it's also true that you know, it was illegal to serve people free food in Santa Cruz in the 80s. And because we had mass protests and because we fed people around the clock at the town clock in 1989 with a group called Soup Without a Permit, SWAP, and also Food Not Bombs from San Francisco, we forced the city, in essence, to start a food program called the Free Meal out at the River Street mini shelter area out there, you know, out at River and Highway 1.
That is exactly what I'm asking about now. If that is considered...
Right, I mean, notice also that you can go down now to Friendship Corner, Cathcart and Pacific, any day at 4:30 or 5, and you find homeless people feeding each other. You find people, like Feed the People, an organization which, by the way, anyone's interested, you can contribute to at 425-3333, or Food Not Bombs, another organization, 425-3355, is it? I think it's 3455. In other words, there has been some growth in autonomous organizations since that time. Naturally, you know, I can't tell you that we put a dent in the homeless situation in terms of real numbers, because that's a function of a larger economy. That's a function of the lack of affordable housing, lack of fair wages, meaningful work, things of that sort. You know, that shows radical problems in the economy. And what we're going to have, of course, is more and worse problems, given the decapitation of the welfare system, the eviction of drug and alcohol categories from SSI, and the removal of GA standards statewide. I mean, I'm not going to promise you a rose garden at all. It's getting to get worse, no question.
Yeah, I think we're almost at the point where we're not saying we can't get rid of the homeless. I mean, that we can find jobs for them and houses for them. I think we've almost given that up, unfortunately, to say that. It's almost like, how are we going to deal with this problem, which is going to grow, and how can we do it in a humanitarian way? We almost accept the fact that they're homeless.
But my question is,
sad to say,
if protests are to occur,
right,
they must include a mass of people.
Agree.
And so, considering the fact that over year after year after year, there's been no mass of people, you made mention of what you said, massive protests. But let's look at numbers of the people who live in this community and look at the number of protesters. On whatever occasion one is protesting, it seems to me that there is no way that anybody can conscionably say that there is a mass movement at all on any level of the causes in this, what do you call it? Do you call it progressive community? I do not call it that. However, if we grant that really there are just a bunch of splinter groups with just a small group of people, and they achieve certain local victories in particular instances of time, what I'm suggesting is that that is clearly so much not enough, but in fact so easily co-opted by the dominant political factions and the way wealth is distributed, not only in this community, but in, of course, the high capitalist society in which we live, that we are basically not spending our energies, our time, in the radicalized fashion that we seem to believe that we are.
Okay, thanks, Colin.
Thank you.
Dan, I think you wanted to say something about that, or?
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to mention to that last caller that he's not in the minority. Many people have told us to stop the protests, that it was useless and things, and
sure,
there are only a handful of us at any one given time.
We're carrying on anyway. It's
however,
kind of a cynical approach. Yeah.
It's all the more reason for myself to continue the protest, because
sure,
there are no massive amounts of people
right
doing this. And this is something that's affecting people all the way across the United States that
right
are homeless. And eventually, especially with the welfare situation being cut off, there's going to be like millions and millions more
right
people homeless.
Sure. Let's take another caller. You're on the air. We'll talk about.
Hello. Good evening. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
One day I spoke with some people on the streets, and a man was telling me how the sleeping ban has disrupted his sleep and his bodily rest and his personal freedom. And a person or some people have... What I'm saying is that the function of the government people put in place is to protect each other, to protect people from violence. Also, however, I would say that if I worked at city council, it would be really, probably would make me angry, even though I don't work at city council, to have people, you know, pointing their fingers at me every day and telling me that I was an evil person or a bad person against them personally. What I think is that those public hearings are very, very good, and that people need to continue to speak out. But I would say that any types of violence or shutting down the city during the day is really the wrong idea.
Let me respond to that caller. I think that I'm a nonviolent person, but I mean, practically speaking, when the Watts riots occurred, it was the first time you had massive action in the war on poverty. So, I mean, let's be realistic. I don't recommend that for Santa Cruz, but if you want to look at the realities of when people will start responding. It's when they see that there's a real problem. If they can continue to dismiss it as a few wingnuts off to the side or some well-intentioned idealists who don't need to be addressed, they will continue to do that. I think the way that we can best address this problem, and I'd like to say that protesters are generally, I think, very tolerant of the autarchs at city council who have been essentially depriving them of basic human rights as well as depriving the rest of the homeless population of Santa Cruz.
Well, each one of us in Santa Cruz does know, excuse me, that housing's damn expensive. And each one of it, each person knows that. You know, there are very few people that don't make this realization, and that is a...
But nobody's looking for housing here
problem.
In this situation, caller. It's not a question of housing. I mean, certainly it is at some level, but what it also is when there isn't housing, are you going to arrest people for falling asleep? And what's your answer to that?
Putting a blanket on.
Yeah, if they're having a blanket wrapped around you, should that be a crime?
A person sleeping in an area who is totally not harming anything is one of the gifts of life that each one of us needs
to have. We agree completely.
Right.
No question.
And then, like the caller before, it's just if you just do these small little localized things, and if nobody's paying attention, nothing's being done, maybe you have to get more people together. Maybe you have to radicalize a little bit. And nobody's saying anything about violence, but you know, a nonviolent mass protest may end up shutting something down for a little bit. You never know. I mean, it's just, but that doesn't mean it's violent.
Well, shutting something down, though, I guess I don't mean violence. I mean a major disharmony and, you know, sides pointing fingers at one another saying that, oh, you are the root of the major problem that we all have.
Yeah, but you see, caller, there are three votes on the city council, theoretically, who have said that they will vote for a reasonable modification of the sleeping ban. That is, they want to make it legal for people to sleep, not to sleep anywhere and everywhere, not to
camp, a fairly easy
but
thing
to make a change in the sleeping ban so that actually sleeping or covering up with blankets will not be illegal per se. There has to be some other health and safety factor. But the fourth vote, which is the mayor, which is Jane Yokoyama, who's retiring, which is Cynthia Matthews, who is running for re-election, which is Mary Beth Campbell. The fourth vote is refusing to do, you know, to show itself, and there is a tension that results. But remember, this is what Martin Luther King said. He said, in essence, the protesters in the South in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, maybe even in the 90s now, are not creating the tension. They are simply exposing the tension and the violence that currently exists.
Well, California definitely has people who've lived in the South before, and, you know, the United States is all one big country, but the South is different
Well, I wasn't really trying to single out the South. I mean, South Santa Cruz is bad enough. I'm talking about our situation right here in town. You know, what I'd like to see is ways we can change what's going on here. And I see a variety of avenues happening, and I really would encourage you and other listeners to vote for people for city council who actually want real change. You know, I mean, someone like Eleanor Eisenberg, who's a big civil libertarian, still will not come out and say she favors a change in those most elementary laws. She's a big leading light in the American Civil Liberties Union, but she can't seem to get her beep together to say, I favor changing the sleeping ban so that people can sleep.
Okay, callers, thanks a lot. We're going to take another caller.
Okay.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah, you can see almost right there two different kinds of callers. The first one kind of saying, well, we don't have enough action out there. There's not enough people. There's not enough tension. You know, nothing's going to get changed and nothing has ever changed. And the next caller saying, I don't think we can handle much more tension. There's no finger pointing and no shutting down. We don't want that. You could see right there two different ways, right. Two different callers. All right, you're on the air. We'll talk about.
Oh, great. Hey, great show.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Should have more feedback.
Oh, yeah.
A couple comments. One thing is the homeless program, I think, from just its title alone, is it puts people off, including the homeless. The real title should be shelterless, because we're all homeless in this country.
Right.
And the second comment I'd just like to make is that as far as revolution and professional revolutionaries, et cetera, back in 1968, probably, I don't know if you were all alive then, but...
Some of us were.
There was an event in France that wasn't televised in this country
much.
It's called the Days of Rage. Okay, and for 7 days, slowly, from the France started out with students, and soon the union members join and the police join. And by the end of about 5 days, there was a party in the street that lasted for 48 hours afterwards, where people weren't working. They voluntarily quit. There was no violent reaction from the military or the police. There was such an overwhelming response that nobody could stop the cascading of people not wanting to go to work.
Yeah, there was a near revolution in France. In
it was a revolution. It was a complete revolution, and that's what I'm trying to point out.
Well, it ended.
No, and you know why it ended? It ended because the people had nothing else to do after the party was over but go back to work. They really hadn't thought up anything else. There was no revolutionary project past party and work.
I think that may be, you know, certainly that's one thought on it. I think another reason, and I don't want to get too historical because I'm trying to focus on the present at the moment, but, and again, the broad issue of revolution is so, you know,
so far away from.
What I'm saying is that given the choice, they'll go back to work.
Right, but I mean,
let's give another choice, you mean?
No, given the choice between partying and working, people have so long a saturation with partying
sure.
and being free, and then they go back to bondage voluntarily.
You know, my perception of the French Revolution of 1968 was not so much that they were partying, as that there was just a crescendo of demands for basic justice that were kind of coming together from a diverse number of groups, ranging from farmers to workers to students, as you said, even to police officers. It wasn't just a party. I mean, I'm sure that was part of it, but it was eventually sold out by the professional revolutionaries, like, you know, Communist Party people who didn't want to see a revolution carried too far, and, you know, others, and socialist bureaucrats and conservative segments, too, that didn't want, you know, politicians in positions of power.
Oh, I would say that
power.
They put the crowning, they maybe put the kick on the pants of the guy out the door, but the guy was out the door before they got to kick him. I'm just saying people came up with a solution, and the solution was, gosh, let's just go back to work because we're done with the party.
And the general strike of 95 or 96, was it? And just recently in France, all this was pretty radicalized, too, and that went pretty far.
The point is, when you try to take the street, that when you try to take the commons, you will cause a revolution. But how long will it last is always the question.
Well,
7 days?
The revolution.
That's a good point, Carl.
How long it lasts.
Okay.
Good point, Carl. Thanks. Well, there you have it. We're away from a sleeping band into revolutionary strategy.
Revolutionary snoozing.
Boy, that's really optimistic. We were kind of cynical there for a while, wondering if we could ever get anybody to show up and do anything. Now we're taking the comments.
Yes, this is Dan again, and I'd like to center on one part. A couple of the callers kind of indicated that, you know, maybe it wasn't any use in having the protests and such, but the thing that I really am centering on is the cruelty of this law. I myself have been kicked awake by policemen to get a ticket. I myself have had numerous blankets and sleeping bags taken from me in 35-degree weather.
60 on the lockup now, right?
And there's 60 to 100 blankets in the police property, and we haven't gotten those back, and we even asked the judge to give it back, you know, and they didn't.
Right, that's just a pretty simple, basic human right, and that's pretty hard to argue against. Right. Okay, you're on the air. Talk about.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't think that you gave your name.
My name?
Yeah.
I'm Michael.
Oh, you're Michael.
Yeah. Hi.
Okay. Hi. I was just wondering how it is that you have invited Mr. Robert Norris to speak on behalf of the homeless.
I'm not speaking on behalf of the homeless.
Oh, no. We're just speaking on issues in Santa Cruz here. It's a wide range of things, actually. But there's nobody on behalf of the homeless. Dan Hopkins is here, who has actually been...
He is homeless.
...homeless for a while. Nobody's on behalf of anybody. These are just kind of issues that have, I think, dogged the city for a long time. We're just bringing them up.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Because I was concerned that maybe you had brought Mr. Norris on as a... an authority, that maybe you were giving him credibility as a person who is representing the homeless.
No, I think I have credibility, but I've never claimed to represent anybody. I mean, my views are my own.
Aren't
you the person whose peers burned a porta-potty on his front lawn?
There were some bureaucrats who put a porta-potty on my front lawn and burned it after we attempted to reclaim property that had been taken from the homeless by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. That's the site at River and Highway 1. You're talking about an incident that happened in 1991. Since that time, the property has been fenced off. Homeless people whose money was spent, federal homeless monies were spent to get that property. It's now being run essentially by a private combine, and the homeless people are fenced off that property. That's what's happening there.
I think we understand Mr. Norris is a charismatic figure in our community and has his share of friends and enemies, I'm sure, on both sides, being such a figure.
Michael, I'm speaking to you now.
Sure.
I wouldn't call him charismatic. I would call him a person with an agenda of his own, uh-huh. and he doesn't represent the homeless.
Okay. I don't claim to represent the homeless,
and he doesn't, well, he's...
You keep saying that, but see, you're talking about a false issue.
I'm talking to Michael.
It's
right
okay.
Now.
It's a talk show, ma'am, and you're welcome to your opinions, and that's why we're not here telling people what to do. I mean, we're here answering calls mostly. That's what we've been doing for
okay,
a half
well,
hour. So
well,
do you have a question or anything you'd like to say?
No, I was concerned that maybe Mr. Norris was speaking on behalf of the homeless, whom he does not represent. But since he isn't, then I guess
sure. And
that's
I think
it.
Just bringing Mr. Hopkins along to answer most of those questions, I think that have to do with most specific.
Yeah.
With the homeless, I think, is the way to go.
All right. Well, because I noticed that Mr. Norris seemed to be dominating the airwaves.
We all like to talk as much as we can. Thanks for calling.
Hey, you're welcome.
Represent
that
remark.
Yeah, that's always a good one. Well, it's good to clarify those things.
Well, I'm glad that my fans are calling in tonight. It's always nice.
I don't tend to represent all talk show hosts either, you know.
Yeah, you represent the talk show hosts.
I don't represent KZSC or UC Regents or anything. We went through all that. Hello, you're on Talk About.
Yeah, I want to know if sleeping outdoors is such a basic human right, why majority of the people don't recognize that.
Or why they don't do it. I thought you were going to say why they don't do it. Yeah, why don't people recognize that?
Well, it's not that sleeping outdoors is such a basic human right. It's more that being able to sleep without being arrested just for the act of sleeping is a basic human right.
But why don't people recognize that?
I think everyone is allowed to sleep outside unless you look like you're a homeless person downtown, and then you're not.
Or actually, in Santa Cruz, you can be sleeping under the bridges.
I slept outside last night at my house, to tell you the truth, because it was so darn hot.
You got a criminal in the studio.
But what you're saying is that you have a basic human right. Why don't people agree that that is a basic human right?
I think they do.
Well, I think most people do agree it's a basic human right.
It's
politicians that don't think it's a basic human right.
Well, that's right.
Merchants, shopkeepers, and property owners.
I think that's why we went to the city council discussion, because there are people that I think are blocking that kind of thing.
So that's the whole point, is that the people in power don't agree with the kind of literal human rights that you're using.
Well, wouldn't you say it's a basic human right to be able to go to sleep?
But why?
I'm asking you a question. Is that a basic human right?
And I'm asking you the question.
Yeah, you're not answering it.
No, I think the caller's point is that if this is such a basic issue, why aren't we recognizing? Why isn't City Council changing the sleeping ban? Is that what you're saying?
Is that the caller's point?
Well, there's even more than that, but that's true.
Oh, good. Okay.
And then that's kind of what we've been saying the whole time, and that's why there's been some name-naming and maybe, and talk about elections, and because if these people on the city councils, if that is the problem, then maybe we need to get people that will do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, it is exactly the problem, and if we need to name like that, we're obviously losing all the battles. So we need to raise the theory to a higher level to encompass not only the human right to be able to sleep outside, but why is it that we receive such horrible offensive actions against that very idea?
I agree completely.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we go to the higher idea of why is it that that is so repugnant to the people who are powerful to grant every human being the right to sleep outside, the right to at least not have their blanket taken away from them.
I think it's a domino theory, right? I mean, it's the whole thing with Vietnam or whatever. I mean, every time, we'll let them sleep outside, and then more people come from out of town, and everybody's sleeping. And it's not so much when they sleep, it's just that when they wake up, there's more of them around, and then people don't shop, and then Santa Cruz gets a bad name. That's it. I mean, it's like one domino after another.
Indeed, it's a sign of the entire breakdown of everything that they believe in. In their face, a breakdown of what they believe in, they themselves do not even believe in what they say they believe in, because they see every day on the streets all these people doing what they are forced to do now.
It's a very cogent analysis.
And it's faulty logic. It's a slippery slope. It's not even true. It's not even logical.
To pursue an action against that mindset, one must come up with a practice which takes in that idea, which is not occurring with the protests in front of City Hall and in some of the other prior actions. It puts the idea there, but it does not make the idea apparent enough so that more people can see that that actual idea is at stake and not just these people who cannot sleep outside.
What do you suggest, caller? I like the way you're going.
The next time it's over 100 degrees, the entire town comes down to downtown Santa Cruz and 10,000 of us sleep out.
I like it. But what do you say, caller? You sound like you have some idea in mind.
I have many ideas, but none
Give
of them have
couple.
Come to fruition.
Go ahead. You got. Go for it.
I have no ideas. I have been thinking about this and come to
right,
absolutely
well,
no.
Well, anyway, that was the idea. We're all going to come down there and sleep out, and now, Dan, you want?
Yeah, I would like to say one thing is.
Okay, thanks, Colin.
We are actually taking this to court, and on the August 30th at 10 o'clock in the morning in Department One. In Judge Kelly's chambers, we are going to challenge the constitutionality of this law. And so we are taking it to a federal level. It is now our entire belief, every homeless person that's at the protest, it's our belief that the city council will not do anything to solve this problem in a humane way. So the only other way that we have to go is to go to higher ups, and that's at the federal level. If it doesn't happen at the lower levels, we will have to go to the federal level. And this is the only way we're going to find an answer constitutionally.
Okay, you're on Talk About.
Yes, I'd like to have a few comments.
Sure.
And I'm representing myself.
There you go.
Excellent.
And Mr. Norris is a very controversial figure in Santa Cruz. And, of course, there are people who like what he does, and there's people who dislike what he does. But I think, by and large, I'm grateful for people like Robert Norris because he's at least doing something. And you know, he at least realizes we're headed on a slippery slope into kind of a totalitarian state, and he's doing something. It's really easy to sit back and second-guess people who are doing something. But anyway, I have 2 points. One is, and I think Mr. Norris hit on it, I think this is a larger symptom of the breakdown in just basic human compassion and human care for, that's supposed to be on some level socially institutionalized.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I don't think it can be solved. I mean, I think we can help, but eventually it's like system.